ever wonder about the pillow talk of terrorists? What do you think they talk about to their wives at night? A very intriguing thing to think about. Well, welcome to the Terrorist Therapist Show. Terrorism and sex, that's what we have today. I'm Dr. Carol, a psychiatrist and your terrorist therapist. I'm here to help you and your family reach your dreams despite living in a time of terror. Well, today, because of the fact that this past week there was a hearing for Omar Mateen's wife, her name is Noor Salman. Omar Mateen, as you will remember, is the terrorist who shot up the Pulse nightclub in Orlando, Florida. And he killed 49 people. He injured 53. It was the deadliest mass shooting of the United States, and it happened on June 11th of 2016. She is in jail, and she had a hearing because her defense attorneys are trying to get her out. And the judge, of course, had to decide whether to keep her in or not. Now, before I get into all of that and what happened specifically with her, you know, people, my call to action today is lock them up. People who are wives of terrorists, people who are other family members of terrorists, and people who are friends of terrorists, their associates, many of them know all along or at some point before the attack what is going to happen, and yet they don't let the authorities know. Now, I'm not saying, I know what you're thinking, isn't this a little harsh? But when there has been proven to be enough knowledge that the person had that the terrorist was going to commit this attack, then they at least need to be tried. Whether they are to be, you know, what their sentence should be is something for the jury to decide. But they need to be investigated. And we need to realize that more of them know more than they're saying, particularly the wives of the terrorists. We have as another example, Catherine Russell. She is the wife of Tamerlan Tsarnaev, who was one of the Boston Marathon bombers. And she's still being investigated. She hasn't been punished at all. She's still denying that she knew anything about it. Of course, you know, there is reason to believe otherwise, since it seems as though he and his brother watched terrorist videos in their home and so on. So she still has not gotten any punishment. Then there's Tashfeen Malik. You might say that she already was punished because she was killed along with her husband, Syed Rizwan Farouk. They were the San Bernardino terrorists. She didn't make any secret of the fact that she knew what her husband was planning because she wanted to go along with him and create the attack. The active shooter attack. And so she was punished by dying. Yet, there seems to be some kind of a stereotype, some kind of a conscious or unconscious bias against believing that wives, especially women who have children, like all of these women had, you know, Noor Salman, the wife of Omar Mateen, they had little boy, he's 4 years old now. Tashfeen Malik and her husband, the San Bernardino terrorists, they had a young child, and a baby essentially. And Catherine Russell, the wife of the Boston Marathon bomber, they had a young child. I mean, you know, it is difficult to understand. I mean, it's natural for us to not want to believe that a mother could be a terrorist or that a mother could go along with or not report her husband when she knows that he is going to go on a terrorist attack. I mean, it's hard. We don't want to believe that mothers, I mean, even when it has nothing to do with terrorism, just in general, we don't want to believe that mothers can kill their own babies, or that mothers can put their babies in danger, or that mothers can think it's okay to support their husbands who are terrorists and essentially leave their children fatherless. And in the case of the San Bernardino killers, motherless as well. So people who don't tell about what they suspect, the radicalization of their relative or friend or acquaintance, need to face justice. Terrorists face lead double lives. And, you know, certainly on the outside, of course, they pretend that they're not terrorists, and they seem to do a pretty good job, unfortunately. But when they're home, they let their guard down, and their wives know what they're really thinking and feeling, especially when it comes to pillow talk. So I'm going to continue talking about the wife of Omar Mateen because the Orlando terrorist attack is in the news now, and she's a great example of what needs to happen to her and what needs to happen to wives in the future who didn't do anything to stop their husband, even though they knew or should have known that their husband was planning a terrorist attack. Well, Noor Solomon is 30 years old. She's accused of aiding and abetting her husband in providing support to a foreign terrorist organization and obstruction of justice. She was recently arrested at her mother's home in California. And she had this hearing this week where her defense attorneys were trying to get her released, and the prosecutors were trying to get her to be kept in jail. Now, interestingly, the judge decided that he ordered that she should stay in jail, at least for now, to have a psychiatric evaluation because she is depressed and has been on suicide watch. So for now, she remains in custody. Now, suicide watch. Suicide, think about that, the wife of a terrorist. It's very interesting. I mean, she could well be suicidal. I mean, for one thing, she just lost her husband, although, as I'll describe, he was abusive to her, physically and emotionally abusive. But, you know, she still probably misses him. She certainly misses him as having the father for her child. And, but besides that, how about her wanting to kill herself because then she could be a martyr just like her husband? Now, you know, that may seem strange if you don't want to believe that she has the same radical Islamic terrorist beliefs as her husband, but not if she does. I mean, if she was exposed, and I'll describe how she was, exposed to videos, jihadist videos, and so on, she could well have been brainwashed as well. So now, the other interesting aspect of her having a psychiatric evaluation is, of course, part of that is to see whether she is able to, whether she is competent to be put on trial. In other words, whether she is able to assist in her own defense, being put on trial for these charges, aiding and abetting her husband and obstruction of justice. Now, but another aspect of this is her defense attorney is trying to say that she has a fragile mental state, and he wants to use this as a way to argue that she has diminished capacity as a defense. In other words, that she shouldn't be held as responsible because of this diminished capacity. Now, Noor is a Palestinian. She emigrated from the West Bank to a suburb of San Francisco. She was divorced from her first husband, who was abusive. That marriage was arranged. And then she went on a dating site called Arab Lounge, where she met Mateen. Now, these dating sites, I hope to goodness, the FBI and the CIA and people like that are monitoring these dating sites, because they seem to be quite a hotbed. Get that, hotbed, pillow talk. Okay, I said we were going to be talking about sex and terrorism. They seem to be a hotbed for terrorist couples hooking up. That's how the San Bernardino terrorists met on a terrorist, well, on a website, a dating website, where apparently people are able to hook up with other wannabe terrorists. So her attorney is saying that she needs treatment because of this fragile mental state, which is kind of interesting because he's also arguing for her to be released. Now, if someone is really suicidal, and you know, and she could well be, if someone is really suicidal, they are not supposed to be released into the world and go to outpatient treatment if they are seriously, you know, here she's on suicide watch in the prison. So in other words, 24/7. And if she went out into the world and went home to her mother, and if she were really suicidal, she would have a lot more opportunity to commit suicide, not being watched 24/7. So I didn't hear about anything or read about anything where he was asking for her to be transferred from the jail to a psychiatric hospital for to be watched 24/7. So there's kind of a flaw in that argument. Now, her attorney says that though she is Muslim, he denies that she is religious and certainly not a fanatical about her religion. He denies that she's a terrorist. He claims that she didn't know anything about what her husband was planning and that she was a battered woman. Now, I totally believe that she was a battered woman because we already know that Omar Mateen's first wife has claimed that he battered her and that she wouldn't have been able to escape were it not for her family helping her. So, you know, I get that. I think that's true. In fact, I think they both said that he took steroids, and that, of course, that made him more volatile and more abusive. So that's all true. And the steroids, you know, the more he took, the longer he took them, the more he was abusive. And her attorney is saying that Noor is just a simple young woman going along and without a clue, right? And then he also complains that the government is going after her only because she's alive and Mateen is dead. He died in the attack. He was shot in the attack and killed. And so she's the only one that the government can go after. He also claims that as a defense for why, you know, to try to prove that she knew nothing, that she bought a Father's Day card for Omar. And she also bought a t-shirt for him that says World's Greatest Dad. And then she went to bed on the night of the attack. Now, again, the night of the attack, the Pulse nightclub attack, was June 11th, 2016. Father's Day was June 19th. That's a week later. Now, it wasn't like she was going to expecting to give him these gifts the next morning. You know, it was a whole week away. So what it seems to me, it's what's more likely the case, is that she and Omar planned this, planned for her to buy these things as an alibi, as a way to try to prove that she knew nothing. You know, she was expecting him to be alive on Father's Day. Well, that's all very interesting, but the prosecutor, and I know you're thinking, why am I being so hard on this poor lady? Maybe she still really didn't know. Well, listen to this. The prosecutors have a lot more compelling arguments. And she was interrogated after the attack, the nightclub attack. She was interrogated for 16 to 18 hours. And at first, she lied and she denied knowing anything about anything. But then she gave conflicting accounts, and then she admitted a number of things that are very, very damaging to her. For her to try to prove her innocence or, that she didn't know anything. She admitted that she knew that Omar left that night with a rifle and a backpack of ammunition. But of course she says, well, he was a security guard, so this was typical of, he was often carrying rifles and ammunition. There are also reports that she went with him when he went to buy the rifle and or ammunition. Also, she admitted to having watched ISIS recruiting videos and jihad videos for at least the past 2 years before the attack. And she was upset because her son was in the room when her husband was playing these videos. Now, that kind of information, makes it really seem credible. I mean, someone doesn't, and her defense attorneys are trying to say that it's true that she didn't have an attorney with her when she was being interrogated. And her defense is saying that they wore her down and she admitted to things that really, she didn't do. She had just been worn down by all these hours of interrogation. But when someone adds pieces of information that are so credible, like that she was upset because her son was in the room when these videos were playing, that makes it seem very believable. Then also she admitted to at least 3 trips to Case the Joints, the Pulse nightclub. She went with her husband to Case these places for the attack. The Pulse nightclub, downtown Disney, which is in Orlando. It's a promenade of shops, restaurants, and movie theaters. And City Place, which is in Palm Beach. It's an upscale entertainment complex. And apparently after she cased these places, her husband was asking her which one, he was asking her to help him pick out which place to attack, which place would make the biggest splash. Now, really, that's another one of those little details that makes it seem very credible, because if you're interrogated and you're being forced to admit certain things, you might sort of begrudgingly say certain things, but when you add details that are very realistic, it makes it hard to then afterwards argue that, oh no, I was just being pressured into admitting these things, just to saying yes to the things that they were asking me. Because, for example, they wouldn't have likely asked her, did your husband ask you which one would make a bigger splash? Then, months before the attack, her husband added her name to his life insurance. Now, okay, you could kind of say, well, yeah, it's normal for husbands to add their wives to their life insurance. In fact, he should have done that as soon as they were married, which was in 2011. The fact that he did it then should have made her wonder why he was thinking that he was going to die. And then much more significant than that is that on June 1st, so 10 days before the attack, they went to the bank together and he added her to his bank accounts as a POD, which means payable on death. Duh. either she's an idiot or she knew a lot more than she is even so far admitting. Because that, that, I mean, putting all these things together, that should have made her question what was going on. Why did this man all of a sudden think that he was going to die? And then they went on a $30,000 shopping spree just before the attack. And this shopping spree included $8,000 for a diamond ring for her. Hush money, maybe? Something that they might have agreed upon during pillow talk? That was hush money. A hush gift. You know, he was a security guard. $30,000 is a lot of money for a security guard to spend. Now, you can kind of understand why he would want to do that, knowing that these were his last days on Earth. But again, that certainly should have made her wonder, like, honey, why are you spending all our money? And why are you buying me a diamond ring? I didn't get you anything. All right, I know, I shouldn't, this is not funny, but you know, it's gallows humor, literally. Then there are different reports about him texting her during the attack and asking her if she heard any news, like he wanted to know what the news, you know, he wanted to be on the news. He did want to make a big splash. He wanted to know, this was in the middle of the attack, and he wanted to know what the news was saying about the attack. He wanted to see his face on television. Well, I don't know if he could have, well, yeah, I guess he could have seen it on his iPhone. And he wanted to know what the world knew. He wanted to know how famous he was. And then there are varying attacks about her calling him and whether they spoke to each other or texted each other and so on. There was some kind of communication for sure. So the prosecutors are saying that she's a risk to the public. And I think that that's true. Certainly one would have to prove that she's not. Because if indeed she knew these things all along and watched all these videos and all of that, who is to say, how are we to know that she has not been influenced in the same way to be a terrorist herself? Now, also in terms of the obstruction of justice, the night of the attack, she told her parents and the police that her husband went to dinner with a friend. So, you know, really, there's just too much here to believe that she didn't know anything about it. Now, why didn't she tell? Why didn't she report her husband early on, you know, maybe after the first scouting trip? Why didn't she tell her husband what they were doing? Why didn't she tell her husband not to do this? And why didn't she tell the authorities that she suspected that her husband was doing this? If she didn't care about people that he was going to kill, why didn't she care about the fact that he was going to be leaving their child without a father? So, you know, of course, the defense for that is going to be, besides the fact that she didn't know anything, the defense is going to be, well, he was terribly abusive. And if she would have, you know, told him not to do it or contacted the authorities, he would have killed her, or he would have been, you know, extremely, even more abusive than he had already been, or certainly that he could have killed her, and especially since he had all this ammunition and all these guns around and so on, you know, that, and because husbands who are batterers are particularly violent when they think that their wives or girlfriends are going to abandon them or have betrayed them in some way. So yes, she would have been under greater danger. However, there are ways of notifying the authorities without identifying who you are. She could have called up and given an anonymous tip. She didn't have to say she was his wife. She could have just said, you know, there's a man, Omar Mateen, who has been scouting locations, or who, you know, yes, could they then tell him that and then he would know it was her? I mean, yes, there's all of these possibilities, but she could just say, there's reason to believe that you really need to investigate Omar Mateen. Now, here's the other aspect to that, though. Omar Mateen had been investigated by the FBI, as you will remember, and he was dropped from their watch list. They stopped watching him. So, however, as it got closer to the attack, and as his wife saw that the pace of everything was building up, and maybe she knew and maybe she didn't know whether he was still on their watch list, but certainly there would have been reason to contact the police, the FBI, again. I mean, you know, she would be contacting them for the first time, but I mean, to contact them and say, you know, you might want to take another look at this man who you forgot about. Now, I, one of the things that I do is I work as a psychiatric expert witness, and I've worked in a number of battered women cases, and I've worked on both sides, the side of the woman and the side of whoever it is that is in a case against them, civil or criminal. And battered women do become incredibly meek, scared, and particularly afraid of their husband, and particularly afraid to leave their husband, but they don't necessarily condone or a terrorism or become a terrorist. So, and there has been nothing so far of Noor saying that she was afraid to leave her husband. So that defense is only going to go so far. Let us get to the Ask the Terrorist Therapist letter and email part of the program. I'm going to read an email that I got, and I want to remind you there to please contact me and with your questions or comments, and there are various ways to do this. One is to go to my Twitter page, which is at Dr. Carol MD, so that's at DrCarolEMD, or go to my Terrorist Therapist Facebook page, which is at Carol Lieberman MD, at CarolELIEBERMANMD. And so you can send messages and through those pages, and soon my website will be finished, my Terrorist Therapist website will be finished, and you'll be able to contact me through there as well. So for today, let's go to a letter, an email from Maggie, who is in Washington. And Maggie says, "Hey, Terrorist Therapist, what's up with all these people who are friends and family of terrorists? You mean to tell me they didn't know that the person is dangerous and might cause an attack? Why don't they call the police and ask for an investigation? And why don't they do more thorough investigating of the people who are around the terrorists?" Okay, well, I've answered your question to some degree, but let me just go over why don't they call the police and ask for an investigation? Well, the easy answer, the primary answer is fear. Their fear, I mean, and I'm not just talking about wives now, family, friends, co-workers, anybody who knows someone who seems to be becoming radicalized. People don't call the authorities because they're afraid of being suspected themselves. They're afraid of, in other words, putting themselves under an investigation, of being suspected of being a terrorist, you know, like birds of a feather flock together, that kind of thing. If you know a terrorist, maybe you're a terrorist. So there's that. And then, of course, as I was talking about before, that if a wife is being abused by her husband, who's a terrorist, she would be afraid of him finding out that she contacted them. But, you know, one would hope, whatever the relationship is to a wannabe terrorist, that people would put the better good, the more, you know, the societal good over fears for themselves. And then why isn't there a more thorough investigation of the people who are the terrorists, you know, when they are suspected terrorists and after they commit an attack? Indeed, an investigation of the people who are around the terrorists. So yes, indeed, there needs to be a more serious investigation, like what I was saying before about Catherine Russell, for example, the wife of the Boston Marathon bomber, who has escaped being in jail for all these years, who was still being interrogated or still being investigated after all of these years. I mean, at least she's being investigated. But yes, there needs to be more investigation of the people around the person who turns out to be a terrorist. And why isn't there more thorough? I mean, look at Omar Mateen, who they stopped watching, even though they already had been notified about him. You know, this is actually an increasing problem because the increasing number of lone wolves and terrorist sympathizers, I mean, people watching terrorist videos, the number it gets greater every day of people being influenced by terrorists. And so the number of FBI and CIA need to be greater in order to investigate the people who they do become aware of, no less the people who are around them, either before or after they commit a terrorist attack. So, you know, obviously this gets rather expensive and unwieldy. But the sooner that there are more thorough investigations, the sooner we can crack down on terrorists and people who are wannabe terrorists before they actually commit a terrorist attack. Well, I'm Dr. Carol, your terrorist therapist. Thank you for listening to the Terrorist Therapist Show. My conclusion for this is, please, you know, they talk about if you see something, say something. This isn't just about bags left at airports or bags left around on street corners. This is also if you have some kind of inkling that someone might be beginning to be radicalized. There are anonymous ways of letting the police, letting the FBI, CIA, letting these authorities know about it. And you can be anonymous or not anonymous. But, you know, it's the number of attacks where there was some kind of notification and where these people wound up being going under the radar. In other words, after they were watched, the authorities stopped watching them. Obviously, if there were people like Noor Salman, the wife of Omar Mateen, who would, you know, say, hey, I don't think you should have stopped watching my husband, then just think, we could have prevented the deaths of 49 people and the injuries of over 50 people in places like the nightclub shooting in Orlando. So thank you for listening. And again, I'm Dr. Carol, your terrorist therapist.